afternoon, and the beetle bugs are zooming, and the tulip trees are blooming, and there's not another human in view but us two. It's a lazy afternoon, and the farmer leaves his reaping, and the meadow cows are sleeping, and the speckled trout stop leaping upstream. As we dream, a fat pink cloud hangs over the hill, unfolding like a rose. If you hold my hand, sit real still, you can hear the grass as it grows. It's a hazy afternoon, and I know a place that's quiet, except for daisies running riot, and there's no one passing by it to see. Come spend this lazy afternoon with me.
Welcome to the Broadway Radio Show. I'm Donald Feltham, and I am beyond thrilled to have this guest on this episode. He's an actor, singer, recording artist. He's a MAC Award winner and a Backstage Bistro Award winner. He's a Broadway performer. He was in Sideshow, one of my all-time favorite shows, back in the 1997 production. He's performed off-Broadway. He's been in regional productions like at the Goodspeed Opera House. And I think relatively recently, you may have seen him as Herr Schultz in a production of Cabaret in Las Vegas, which is now his home. He's sung at places like Carnegie Hall, Birdland, the Oak Room, as well as all over the country, from San Francisco to Chicago to Palm Springs. He's a recording artist, as I said, with multiple albums, although he has not released an album in more than 20 years, which is why he's on the show now, because he has a brand new album. It is Philip Officer. Hi, Philip.
Well, hello. Was that really all about me?
That was all about you. You have a very storied history of things you have done. Your new album is called You Fascinate Me So. Philip Officer salutes Mabel Mercer. It is coming out this coming week on Center Stage Records. And also, which we will talk about later in the show, you're going to be at 54 Below on October 24th performing your show, You Fascinate Me So, which is all about Mabel Mercer. And you will also be appearing at the Cabaret Convention, which is presented by the Mabel Mercer Foundation, which will be October 21st through the 23rd in New York at the Live at Jazz at Lincoln Center, which is fantastic. It's a fantastic thing. I think this is their 36th annual Cabaret Convention in New York. It's a fantastic, if you've never been, people, you should definitely go. It's a fantastic series of evenings. I think this year they're doing Cy Coleman, an evening of Cy Coleman, an evening of Julie Stein, and then another evening. And it's some of the best performers from the world of cabaret all show up to do this. It's fantastic. So, and like I said, it's all presented under the auspices of the Mabel Mercer Foundation. So for listeners, before we delve into the album and everything that's going on, for listeners who are unfamiliar with you, why don't you give a little bit of background, at least, about where you grew up and how you got into performing and singing?
I grew up in a small farming community in Missouri. I was lucky. My parents exposed both my brothers and I to music. Mm-hmm. You know, as an extracurricular type of thing, it stuck with me. Although I sort of branched out into the theater and got very interested in acting and singing when I was in college. Mm-hmm. And during college, I was in a professional program that was affiliated with a regional repertory theater in Kansas City. and went to university there, and then moved to New York City to pursue theater, musical theater, which I have done, you know, throughout my career. But I also was introduced to the intimate art form of cabaret. And through the cabaret impresario, Donald Smith, who founded the Mabel Mercer Foundation. And that's what you could say were the beginnings of my solo singing, becoming very interested in song interpretation.
I know this is a tough question, but do you have a preference when it comes to performing in musical theater versus cabaret? I mean, they're two different, very different things, but they're also in some ways very similar. There's a little bit of an overlap between the two.
Well, they're, yeah, exactly. You know, I think I wish that I maybe would have done more theater, because I was lucky and did a fair amount of singing. It's just sort of the way the cards fell for me. But I think a balance of both. And, you know, I think when you really look at it now, even a lot of the Broadway performers who become Broadway stars eventually cross over into solo, doing solo shows of some kind, or they get a recording produced or something like that. So, but I think it's, I think everybody should have to do it. I think it really forces you to make some decisions about yourself. Also gives you, the great thing is it gives you, you know, everybody's different. Doing a solo thing really gives you a lot of space and capacity to create your own, as opposed to when you're in a theater production, you're in a group thing. You've got a director, you have a costume designer, you have a choreographer, you have people making a lot of decisions for you. Whereas I think the solo thing, you obviously, you can go hire someone, and you should always have a third eye. I think it's always good to have bounce things off of people. You can have someone tailor make something for you, or someone help you shape something. There are different ways of going about it. But I think it behooves everybody to build some muscles to have to create something from scratch, and gives them an opportunity to speak their own voice, sing the stories that they want to sing.
Right. And I guess that's those are really the challenges of doing solo work, doing cabaret, because you're certainly more exposed up on stage, and you're not always necessarily playing a character with, although you have written pattern sometimes that you're working with between songs, but the reward and the interaction with the audience is different. Even though you're working when you're doing musical theater, you're certainly feeding off the energy from the audience, but it's very different when you're doing a cabaret show and you're solo.
Well, I think the one huge element that makes a difference, and it's sometimes very effective in the theater, is in a cabaret solo thing. It's not unusual, especially in between songs, to break that fourth wall and to talk to the audience, to talk to them one-on-one, to engage them. Well, you don't normally do that in the theater. There is a fourth wall. Although, like I say, some productions, it is quite the vehicle to break that fourth wall and have performers talk to the audience directly. It's a choice and done for a reason. But I think that that's kind of the beauty of a cabaret venue, in that, you know, it really does make it a lot more intimate of an experience, a one-on-one thing, and there's not that much distance, but physically and emotionally,
right? Exactly. Talk about, you know, you've been doing, you know, cabaret for many, many years now. Talk about the keeping it fresh for you and keeping it fresh for audiences, because when you've been doing it for a while, you do get a following of people who want to come see you multiple times and see you throughout the years, and trying to keep putting together a new show and keeping it interesting for yourself on stage and keeping yourself excited about getting out there performing new material and getting it exciting for your audiences to come see you. What is that like for you?
Well, I think keeping things fresh doesn't necessarily mean you have to do a different song list. It's I have several things going on in my head right now. One of the things is we work so hard to put a show together like I've been working on this Mabel Mercer project for a solid year. And when in the beginning, when you told me, when I started it, I didn't know that it was going to manifest out into a recording. And so it takes time to flesh stuff out, to do research, to learn the material, to personalize it, that a performer is not so eager to move on to another project real fast. You sort of want to live in that world for a while. You want to swim in that pool, enjoy that pond, you know. And so I think that it's trying to keep something fresh really goes to the core of why you picked the material that you picked that you want to perform. Why do you want to sing that melody? Why do you want to tell that story again? The need to tell it. That's what I'm obsessed about, the musical Hades Town. When they come out at the end of that performance at the night and they say, you know what? We're going to tell you this story all over again. It's that need to want to tell that story. So I think in terms of keeping things fresh for a performer, that's something that the performer has to find on their own. And it's not just necessarily changing the song list. Gosh, when you start changing the song list, you got different words, you got different stories, and you got to, as Mabel would say, you got to dig down deep in those songs. You can't just sort of surf over the top of them and think that's enough. So I think that it's the freshness, trying to, no matter how many times you've done that song over and over again, if you're Betty Buckley and Cats singing Memory again, how can you do that for the 879th time? And I think that really goes to the singer, actor understanding the song and the need to have to tell that story.
Right.
And if you lose that need, then you better find another song. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's time to move on to another song.
Why did I choose you? What did I see in you? I saw the heart you hide so well. I saw a quiet man who had a gentle way, a way that caught me in its glowing spell. Why did I want you? What could you offer me? A love to last a lifetime through. And when I lost my heart so many years ago, and willingly to you. If I had to choose again, I would still choose you.
And for me with Mabel, I knew that the material was rich and deep and she sang the best songs. What was really great for me was to be able to discover her personal story and her personal journey and teach people about that, because a lot of people don't really know much about her background, where she came from, and that kind of a thing. And so in that, this isn't necessarily a history lesson, what I'm doing in the show. I do like to incorporate some of that story and those elements. And that's exciting for me to share, because a lot of us know her name. We know her. We don't really quite know some of the details.
Exactly.
How she came to become who she was, and why we're talking about her today. Why did President Ronald Reagan decide to bestow a Presidential Medal of Freedom to her? And it was her, what she gave to our songbook and taught our young singers that important time in the evolution of American popular song. So it's exciting. It's that need of, I think, of a performer wanting to tell the stories. And ultimately, if you have a career, you build more shows. And yeah, you're right. People, they start to come to follow you because they like your shows. We just had a great performer here in Las Vegas at the Smith Center a couple of weeks ago. The fantastic singer instrumentalist Billy Stritch was here, and I have such respect and admiration. And you know, he's so talented and great songs and smart and sophisticated, and the audience in the palm of his hand. But yet he could introduce you to new songs, new ideas, and you walked away feeling smarter when you left. Not only entertained, but you just feel smarter. And I think that that's an exciting thing to be able to do with this platform and in the songs you choose to do, the stories you choose to tell. Mm-hmm. I think are a thing that keeps it fresh for performers. And you find a project, a writer, a composer, a performer that stimulates and inspires you, and then hopefully you develop a show if it means that much.
Do you recall the moment when you said to yourself, I want to do a show about Mabel Mercer? Because like you said, people may be familiar with her name and they know, well, she was a singer, but I don't really know that much about her. And they don't realize how, and when you answer, kind of explain also the influence she had with the American Songbook and other singers. I mean, people like Lena Horne and Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett and people like that all absolutely cite her as a major influence on them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the thing. Yeah. You know, the moment, well, I was sort of toying, you know, with the idea, because people do tributes and we have a foundation dedicated to her and preserving her legacy. And there have been a few performers, great artists who we just sadly lost recently. Joyce Breach has got three beautiful recordings celebrating Mabel Mercer. But I don't think we can keep that candle lit enough. We have to, you know, keep it burning. I was toying with the idea and had thought about it, and I knew that the songs were great. I wasn't really worried about anybody thinking I was trying to do an imitation, because I'm a male and I'm Caucasian and she was a female and biracial. But I was having a glass of wine with a friend visiting, and they just sort of, Mabel's name had maybe come up, but out of the blue, they said, "You should do a tribute to Mabel Mercer." I was like, that's almost like all I needed to push me off the fence. It was like, whoa, that came sort of, I don't know where that dropped from, but it just seemed like a sign that it was the right. And then I talked to a couple of people who I thought were important as to what, if they thought I should go down that path, and they strongly urged me to. So I felt like, okay, this is good. This is, and I also had someone who I value and trust a lot tell me they thought it was a mistake. It was surprising that, because I respect their opinion a lot, but then I just very quickly realized I didn't think they were as informed about, that they made an informed observation. I thought they were maybe a knee-jerk reaction that they thought about it. That anyway. So, but yeah, you know, it's the way it goes. You know, not everybody's going to always agree on eye to eye with art. You know,
it seemed like a natural fit to me, especially knowing your previous recordings, and once I heard the album, reminding myself of her work, going back and listening to some of her recordings after I listened to yours, it seemed like a natural fit to me, because I have always thought of you as one of the best interpreters of songs. You're not just a vocalist, you're an interpreter of songs, and you're one of the best in the business, especially when it comes to male vocalists. There are people like Barbara Cook, who's also considered a fantastic interpreter of songs, and that's what Mabel Mercer was to me, is that she really, it's her interpretations of songs and the way she puts them across and the way she sings them in her own unique way, that I think is what people, like I said, like Sinatra and Lena Horne and Peggy Lee and people like that all took from her, was the unique sensibility of putting your own stamp on these songs. And that's what she contributed to the American Songbook. And I think that's why I felt it was such a perfect fit for you, because you're such a unique stylist when it comes to singing, and the way you pick your songs and you interpret them. So at first I thought, well, that's an interesting choice. And then when I heard the album, I said, oh, this actually makes sense. It's the right choice.
Yeah, thank you. I felt the commitment to the lyrics, which is what I was taught by, I think, the people that are the teachers, that they insisted that's really had to be. And that all just falls into line to what Mabel was all about. What I think was interesting about what the people like Sinatra and Lena Horne and Peggy Lee, and the list goes on, Nat King Cole and Johnny Mathis, they were all there. Even the great singer Eileen Farrell, the great opera singers, everyone with a microphone being invented and American popular music growing just from Tin Pan Alley into the Broadway composers being brought into American popular music. And what was happening with the radio, and people were starting to record. It was that intimacy that they said Sinatra and those people saw with Mabel Mercer, with what she was doing in the clubs, that they brought to the microphone. Uh-huh. I think that was a really interesting time when you look, and that's how that evolution happened. She was singing the songs at night in the clubs, and they were recording them and becoming, and she obviously has her recordings, but it was a different stylistic thing. It's a thing that evolved and it happened. And that's why all those great singers attribute, give her, you know, respect that she is due for having really inspired that. And like you say, I started out to be an actor, and it's not really. I mean, obviously, I like to sound good and hit notes as best as I can and on pitch and a full or not full voice, you know, dynamics. But ultimately, it's really about what is the story that I'm telling? How am I saying this? And that ultimately affects my phrasing. I don't think about the phrasing from a musical standpoint. You can do that. That is an option. There's nothing wrong with that. I choose to do it from the acting standpoint. How do I approach this? And then the phrasing comes out of that. And I think ultimately, when I have that emotional connection with the story, I just become a stronger technical singer, period. It just, because there's a connection, there's an energy, there's a flow that happens. So in the recording, it wasn't about singing loud or big. It was about being present, feeling like you were there singing right in someone's face, right in their ear, making it be intimate, like you were right there. That was something that we wanted to go for, that we wanted to have with the recording, which is what Mabel was about.
Right. And it certainly works. As I told you before we started recording the show, it's a fantastic recording. It really is. It really showcases, it works on two different levels, because it's a wonderful tribute to Mabel Mercer, but it's also a fantastic showcase for you, because it really shows off your skills as an interpreter of songs. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more of a general question, in the sense that, what do you find yourself attracted to when it comes to picking the songs or songwriters? that you are attracted to? Is it, are there certain themes that attract you in songs, or what speaks to you when you're looking for songs for your set list? I'm just curious.
I think a majority of songs are about relationships in some sort of form or another. A majority of songs, subject matter, are just about relationships of some kind. And so it's finding balance. But I think that for me, melody either touches you or it doesn't. You know what I'm saying? A melodic line just, you know what I'm saying? You just hear it in it. Like I start hearing Sunday from Sunday in the Park with George. It is going to push buttons so fast. Music does that to us. I, again, go back to the lyric. And with Mabel, my research was, I knew all, she's just sang just about every song ever written. She just knew so much. But it was like, I went to her recordings so I could hear her voice. And it was the stories that jumped out. And one of the songs that jumped out for me immediately, which really influenced a major thing on the recording, was there was a song that was in the Broadway musical, New Girl in Town, originally Bob Merrill. And the song in the show is called Look at Her, Look at Her, Look at Her. Mabel sang, look at him, look at him, change the pronoun. I heard that song and I said, I have to sing this song, both musically, melodically, and lyrically. I want to sing these words, and it would be sung to a man.
Look at him, look at him, excuse me, while I look at him and melt just like I'm butter in the sun. Look at him, he can't see how much he's affecting me. I think he's sweet as taffy. He thinks I'm downright daffy. Look at me, from the start I've been choking on my heart, tasting words that I'm afraid to say. I'm scared to make a move he wouldn't understand. I'm scared to stroke his hair or even hold his hand. I know I mustn't touch, but I don't mind so much if I can look at him, look at him, look at him. I realize the reason I have is just to look at him. Look at him. Look at him.
That influenced me that the pronoun, that for the entire album, that I was going to bend the pronouns that way for myself, to be truthful, to be honest, things that I thought were right for me. And so in a couple of songs, I maybe would not have done that 25 years ago. That influenced a lot for me. And I think the whole first half of this recording tracks in a story. So that really was something, as I started, it guided me in picking the songs that I wanted to pick in to tell a story. And then, of course, the root of songs is like, okay, I just have to sing this song. I have to do an Alec Wilder song because they were such good friends. He was a great composer. Mabel worshipped him. And, certain things. I was like, okay, I have to sing this song. One of my favorite songs is Once in a Blue Moon, an old Jerome Kern song, Ann Caldwell. Process of elimination, but trying to find, as I say, a lot of these songs are about relationships. Was trying to find different angles to come from, different points of view, and that's what makes it, I think, interesting. So you're not being repetitive and repeating the same stories, same emotions.
I was going to say it must have been time consuming and quite a task to pull together the set list for the show. And ultimately, when you were putting the album together, figuring out which songs you were, I mean, does the album mirror the show, or did you make any changes?
Exactly. It does exactly. And
I tell
you, it does exactly, which really, for me, just reinforces that we made some really good, that we made the right choices.
It must have been hard to whittle down from based on all the songs that she sang. It must have been difficult making some of those choices and cutting out certain things. And I obviously, like you said, you are telling a bit of a story throughout the show, at least the first half, you said, that's right?
My research, certain things just kept jumping. Like I say, I like that song. I like this song. I mean, there's, I could do a whole nother set of songs, and that's why the beautiful Joyce Breach had three different recordings that she did. There's just so much wealth of material. But certain things, like I said, they just stick with you personally. They push a button in you that you know, okay, this is a story that I want to tell or I want to relate. The interesting thing about putting this show together was Mark Hartman and I, the musical director and I, I made the decision pretty much ahead of time, like, these are the songs I want to do. We spent 4 afternoons putting the show together, and it came together quickly and easily. When I say that quickly and easily, things just happen naturally, organically. To me, that was such a great sign. Like, we're not forcing things, trying to make them work. Our ideas are happening. Things, things are coming together. It seemed it worked. And we did it in Las Vegas before we took it to New York. It was the same show. The only couple of little changes I would say is just for I flip flop. If I would do the show live, I swip swap the last 2 songs just for whereas on the album, I wanted it to end with the selection, but we just flipped the songs. It was just sort of a thing. And we added one song that I had not initially done. I had a couple of people say, why, Mabel, you should have sung. And I was like, okay. It was another Cole Porter song. Mabel Mercer had an entire Cole Porter recording. There's such great Cole Porter songs. I said, well, I'm trying to cover a lot of different songwriters, but I had not initially done Down in the Depths on the 92nd floor. On the 90th floor, I don't know where it came up, the 92nd floor. Down in the Depths. 90th floor, I just rewrote his title. We added that, which is great fun. Mm-hmm. Someone even asked me, how did you deal with the Pet Pietet Gown lyric? I said, I sang Pet Pietet just like it was written. I just sang the way it was written.
with a million neon rainbows burning below me, and a million blazing taxis raising a roar. Here I sit above the town in my pet pailletted gown, down in the depths on the 90th floor, while the crowds at El Morocco punish the parquet, and at 21 the couples clamor for more. I'm deserted and depressed in my regal eagle's nest, down in the depths on the 90th floor, when the only one you wanted was another. What's the use of swank, cash in the bank galore? Why, even the janitor's wife has a perfectly good love life. But here am I, facing tomorrow, alone in my sorrow, down in the depths on the 90th floor.
When you were doing your research on Mabel, was there anything that you discovered that surprised you, or you thought was kind of an interesting tidbit that just really struck you as like surprising, funny, interesting? I mean, for example, I mean, I knew who she was, but I didn't know a lot of her history. Because she's so iconic and so instrumental in, as people say, in American standards and reinforcing and establishing the American songbook and all these iconic American singers. And she was born in England, and she and her career actually started in Europe, because she didn't actually come to the States until World War II broke out. You know, that's, she established herself, even though her father was American, her mother was English, and she was an English music hall performer. I don't think people realize that she was actually born in England. So it's just an interesting story.
It's the story. I see, what I find is a story of survival.
Yeah.
That's what I find very interesting about her. We could go on about her. We could go on about her personal story. Yes, she was born, you know, American father, English mother. But the details, her mother was 13 years old. She never met her father. It's a crazy story. She spent her life running from wars. She left London, went to Paris, had to get out of Paris. She was raised by nuns in a Catholic boarding school. Mm-hmm. She didn't see another person of color till her teen years. Crazy, crazy story. So to talk about that, her, you know, story of survival. The other interesting thing about Mabel, I think, is why we don't know a whole lot about her so much, was very discreet, private person. She was raised by nuns. She didn't talk a lot. She kept a lot of stuff to herself. And even in her shows, when she performed, she didn't talk in between songs. She didn't talk. She sang songs. She brought her life to her songs. She didn't. So there, it was even a lot of her close friends, there was a lot of information they didn't know about Mabel. She was very private. So I think, you know, what things we know about her, but I think the story of survival is really what is, and her humbleness, her just grateful being, you know, she was just like so many, just found her way and up and over a lot of obstacles and barricades. It was an interesting life, and continued to perform and become the icon to some of us that she is.
She certainly is sort of like the icon of cabaret performers and a lot of vocalists throughout the decades. As we said, most of the big names in the business have always looked at her as one of the major influences on them.
When she came to America, she was leaving Paris, which was really an exciting time for her in the 1920s, because that's when she met Cole Porter. That's when she was meeting a lot of performers of color, mm-hmm. finally, musicians. They were all going to Paris to get away from America. It was much more free over there for them. So when she, Mabel, came to America, she was aware of the potential racism that she could face. And, you know, there were certain clubs she could perform in and certain clubs she could not perform in. And even neighborhoods where she could live. It was a very interesting journey. The story of survival is pretty amazing to me, and very religious and devout. You know, having been raised and schooled by nuns, she remained religious throughout her life, and attending, you know, singing until 4 o'clock in the morning, going and grabbing breakfast, and then grabbing mass before she went home and went to bed. It's pretty amazing story.
Talk briefly about getting back into the studio for you, because as I mentioned at the top of the interview, it's been 20 plus years since you released an album. And so what was it like getting back into a recording studio to do a new album?
Well, hard work. I don't know how else to say it. You know, I guess it's like anything. Some people take to certain things easier, sometimes a little bit longer than others, you know, before you get really comfortable with it. Obviously, I've recorded some in my career, but I haven't spent tons of time, hours in the recording studio. So I find it, the focus and the energy, it's very, very difficult. It requires, and we did this fairly quickly in terms of actually making the recording. We didn't have the luxury of a lot of hours to get it done. The good thing was we had done the program before, we'd explored the material, we knew the journey we needed to take, and it was a matter of just, you know, getting our energies together, turning on the power and getting in front of the microphone, and we did it. I find because of the detail work that goes into it, it's the listening over and over and over that gets, it's hard for me personally, but it's necessary, you know, part of the project. But ultimately, you know, just listening, because you hear every little thing. But I feel really good, you know, now that I have to tell you, once we were done with it and we were handing it over to be mastered, I felt a sense of relief. I was really happy with what we had achieved. And it was like, you know, put your nose to the grindstone and just work, work, work. And I was surrounded by some great people who really cared, some great musicians. So that made the process fun.
Well, the album is fantastic, and it's coming out this week from Center Stage Records. And what do you, and the listeners know that I'm going to repeat this, but the listeners always know that I harp on this all the time. And that is, if one, you can stream it, but if you stream it, that barely puts pennies in anyone's pocket. So the thing you are needing to do is you need to purchase a digital download, so that people make some money that finances these recordings. Do we know if there's going to be a physical CD yet, or is it going to be just digital so far?
There's just going to be digital. That will really be all. There will be a digital album booklet and stuff that comes with that.
Perfect. Perfect.
But right now we are not doing this.
Okay. So they can purchase the digital download, which would be very helpful. But as I always harp on the listeners, when you purchase the digital download, your job is to dedicate the time to sit down and listen to Philip's new album from beginning to end in one listening session. Because just like a cast recording, it is telling a story. The songs are in a sequence for a reason. You can sit through and you can pick and choose and say, oh, I know this song, I know that song, I'm going to skip around and listen to the songs I know. But I always encourage people, even if it's a vocalist recording, to sit down, dedicate the time, whether it's an hour or an hour and a half, to sit and listen to it from beginning to end, start to finish in one session, because it takes you on a journey. And that's what this album is doing. It's what all vocalist albums are doing, because they put a lot of effort into this. And it really does, and this one especially, does take you on a musical journey. And it's absolutely fantastic to listen to. So please listen to it from beginning to end, because it's such a rewarding experience. And as I mentioned, also mentioned at the top, you are going to be at 54 Below this coming week. You're going to be there on the 24th. And so we'll have a link here on the website so people can purchase tickets to see you. What can people expect to see?
A live recording of a live performance of the recording. We're going to do it from top to end with the musicians that were in the recording studio. So super excited about that.
Yeah. And 54 Below is like one of the premier spaces to see shows in New York. It's fantastic. It's a great, great venue. And you are also going to be at the Mabel Mercer Cabaret Convention.
I will be there, yeah. The night before, on Thursday, the 23rd, I will be as part of that. And singing one of the songs from the CD will be in the convention.
Right. So if you've never been to the Cabaret Convention and you would like to go, you can check that out. Just you can look up MabelMercerFoundation.org, and that has all the information about the Cabaret Convention. So now that I have told people to listen to the album from beginning to end, what do you hope people are going to get experience-wise? Once they listen to your recording, what do you want them to take away from it?
Well, I hope that there's an intimacy that they feel from the recording, that they feel like I'm singing to them personally. I think would be really something that we try to achieve with it. And you know, I think there's just some great stories in the lyrics that I think everyone can emotionally connect with, and journeys through relationships. And so I think, and I applaud your encouraging people to listen to the recording through once. It gives you a sense of the story and the how it flows. And then I think, you know, random things really people can relate to. So I feel like, you know, if we get an intimacy across with people, I feel like this is really just I feel like Philip's in the room here singing to me. We've been very successful. I would be happy with that.
Yep. And I think that's exactly the experience that I had. I sat and listened to it with my earphones on, and it was exactly that. It felt like you were performing right here in my living room, and I felt like I was here having an experience of a concert. And as I said, Philip, I think you're one of the best interpreters of the American Songbook that's out there. So I encourage people to purchase, like I said, the digital download of this new album. It is called You Fascinate Me So. Philip Officer salutes Mabel Mercer. And I also encourage people that if you can, seek out the Mabel Mercer recordings so you can actually hear Mabel Mercer if you're unfamiliar with her work, because the recordings are out there.
I encourage that too. Yes, please. The recordings are out.
Yep, they are out there. So listen to her recordings as well so you can get a feel for what this fantastic woman that we're all talking about, so you can get a feel for who she really was. So anyway, I continued success, and I hope that the response to the album is everything you hope it's going to be, because I think it's one of the best vocalist recordings that I've heard this year so far. It's just terrific.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Appreciate your time.
So thank you so much for taking the time today.
My pleasure.
Why did I wander here and there and yonder, wasting precious time for no reason or rhyme? Isn't it a pity? Isn't it a crime? My journey's ended, everything is splendid, meeting you today has given me a wonderful idea. Here I'll stay. It's a funny thing, I look at you, I get a thrill I never knew. Isn't it a pity we never met before. Here we are at last. It's like a dream, the two of us, the perfect team. Isn't it a pity we never met before? Imagine all the lonely years we've wasted. You with the neighbors, I at silly labors. What joys untasted. My nights were sour, spent with Schopenhauer. Let's forget the past. Let's both agree that I'm for you, you're for me. And it's such a pity we never, never met. Before.